Hi guys, and welcome to a new episode of Worlds Collide with me, your host, Victoria. And yeah, this is the podcast where I talk to people who moved abroad. And this week's episode is another one about moving to Dubai and living in Dubai. So, but first, I just wanted to ask you for a quick favor. So if you really enjoy listening to my podcast, then click on the follow button in the corner of your app. And if it's not too much to ask for, then why don't you give it a 5-star rating wherever you listen to the podcast? Because this would help me immensely to gain a bigger audience and be more recognized. And I think like this podcast could help people who are thinking of moving abroad, especially when there is a country they are interested in. And now to this week's episode. I said earlier it's about moving and living in Dubai. My guest today is Emma, and she is a new mom and also a business owner in Dubai, and she's originally from England. So this episode is so exciting and interesting, I think. It's about pregnancy in Dubai versus in the UK, and then healthcare, and then also the big problem of not being married in the UAE. And then also the fact that she was setting up a business over there, so which is super cool. And then later in the episode, we talk about cloud seeding. It's the thing where they make it rain, which is crazy. Anyway, so I don't want to take away too much of today's episode. Just listen to the whole thing. Here it is. So my guest today is Emma. Hi, Emma. How are you?
Hi, thank you for having me on the podcast.
Yes, I'm glad you're here. So tell me, where are you calling from?
I am in Dubai, UAE, in the Middle East.
How long have you been there?
I've been here 3 years now. I was in London before.
Okay, and are you from London originally?
My hometown is about 100 miles from London, so a smaller place called Cheltenham, which is to the west of England. But I lived in London for most of my adult life.
Okay, all right. So you're from London.
Yeah.
I mean, cool. And so what brought you to Dubai?
Honestly, it was in the middle of the pandemic. So in the UK, there was something called furlough where you basically weren't working. So lots of people in the UK were put on furlough. And we were in like a 350 square foot flat with really scary neighbors and we weren't really doing much. So when a recruiter called me from Dubai, I actually took the call. I probably wouldn't have otherwise. And I thought, why not just go through this recruitment process? I'd never been to Dubai. So I told them straight up that I wasn't really that interested, but obviously there wasn't much happening in London. Yes. So why not?
Yeah.
And then I think it ended up being about a 6-month process of all of these different interviews. And then on Valentine's Day, I flew out. And yeah, I've been here for 3 years now.
Oh, so like how did you kind of change your mind? Because in the beginning, you said you were not that interested. And then, so what was your decision behind this then?
I think after just the boredom of being in lockdown, and then there'd be another lockdown and another lockdown. And actually, at one point, both of our parents, mine and my partner's parents, live close by in our hometown. So we thought, why are we paying London rent? We're in this tiny place. Let's move back home to our parents' house for a bit. And then you're just back to square one. So the allure of Dubai compared to being not working and not really doing anything, just in limbo, kind of made a bit of sense. I just felt like, why not? If I don't like it, I'll come back, but it's better than being stuck at my parents' house.
Absolutely. And so what was the pandemic like in Dubai at that time?
Well, by the time I moved out, they'd had a really strict lockdown, but that was that. So people were wearing masks everywhere. And I'm trying to think back. It seemed a lot less strict than the UK. They were very fast at rolling out vaccines and things like that. And people just got on with it. And they, in the UK, there was a lot of people who had feelings about the different rules and the lockdowns. And it was all felt a bit messy. Whereas here, you don't really question it. You're told these are the guidelines, these are the rules, this is what you've got to do. And you just get on with it and you do it. You don't really spend loads of time thinking much more about it. So it felt like normal life here, really.
Okay, because I was just thinking about the travel ban that was going on in Europe.
Yeah, well,
that's the US.
Yeah, that's why I remember that I flew out on Valentine's Day, because that day the UK put the UAE on the ban list, on the red list. So I actually didn't see my partner for another 6 months. I was out here totally alone.
okay, so he didn't come with you at that time?
No, he flew out later. I have a whole funny story about how we found out I was pregnant. He'd flown out and he'd spent months trying to get a job, thinking it would be easy, and nothing was happening. We'd had a chat saying, we'll put off having children for a year or two. And then on his birthday, we found out that I was pregnant. And luckily, he got an interview the next day for a job that he actually got.
Oh, good.
He had his plane ticket booked and everything. So it's so funny how things turn out.
Oh, that is crazy.
Yeah.
Because like I was like, okay, but then how did he get there without a job? Or, I mean, I don't know. If you guys are not married, then...
Yeah. He was literally about to go back. He had his plane ticket booked.
Oh my God, you were so lucky. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And then he didn't end up going back then.
He did, to tell his parents that we were having a baby and that he was moving to Dubai. And then he got stuck with COVID.
Okay.
But no, he didn't go back to stay.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's crazy. Life, right? Sometimes. Did you then... started working for the company, and did they provide everything for you once you started?
Yeah, so actually the company that I joined when I first moved, I only stayed for 6 months. It wasn't it didn't really work out very well. And I hear this a lot in Dubai. I don't know why, but people get their foot in the door, that company tends not to work, and then they'll move somewhere else. And I don't know if that's a thing, but I've heard it from quite a few people. So I then moved on, and I had started another job by that point. So still within Dubai, still within fashion, what I was doing. And the company, in terms of what they provide, they've got the visa, your salary. Here you don't pay tax. You're probably aware of that. Mm-hmm. So salaries seem quite good. Within your salary, they'll break it down as well in terms of, they'll say this is for like a housing allowance. This is your basic salary. And they'll break it down further. But really, it's just one salary to use as you wish. And you'll also get the health insurance as part of that.
Okay.
Yeah, but I didn't have specific housing or anything like that.
Okay, so then how did you start? How was the beginning for you?
The beginning, when I first moved over, the first company I was with put me in a hotel for the first month whilst they sorted visas and things like that. And then I moved in to a room in a flat share with some other girls. And then just before Rich came over is when I actually got an apartment. Funnily enough, the apartment that I really wanted to rent was a one bed apartment, which fell through. And I had to get this two bed at the last moment. And I was cursing it because I was like, I don't want to pay this extra money for a two bed we don't need. And then there we go. I was pregnant in the next few months.
And so you were really lucky and you were really, really happy that you had it.
Yeah. All these things just fell into place. It's weird how life works, isn't it?
It seems like it was meant to be.
Exactly. That's what I think.
Yeah. So how long were you in Dubai when you found out that you were pregnant?
Just under a year, I think. Okay. No, I think I'd been here for a year, pretty spot on. Yeah.
And were you thinking at that point, like, you want to stay there or you want to go back? Or
interesting that you asked that, because most of the people, when I said I was pregnant, they'd say, oh, well, you're gonna come home then. But for me, I didn't want to do that. The healthcare here is so good. I really wanted to have the baby here. And I think a lot of my friends back home had assumed that the healthcare would be better in the UK. But with not being married, it really was quite stressful. It had only been legal from the month that I got pregnant. And so I did have to balance up. There were lots of conversations, lots of looking into different avenues of getting married quick, but things never just really happened. And there'd be a reason for why we didn't go for this or we didn't go for that, or time just went past and we didn't get married, basically. And then it was all, it felt a bit risky. We didn't know whether my medical insurance would cover me. To be honest, I think
because of your marital status.
Yeah. So this is a big thing here at the moment. Even though it's now legal, I can only think of one health insurer that will cover you if you're unmarried. So it really is a lottery whether they'll cover you. I ended up being lucky, but we still didn't know when I was delivering that baby whether we were going to be footing the bill or not.
Oh,
luckily, it's not as expensive as in a lot of other places. So, yeah.
And does it have any other obstacles being not married besides the insurance?
So the insurance, but also we weren't sure for a while how it would work with a birth certificate. And that's probably the biggest thing, because you don't want to, how can you just not have a birth certificate? You then can't get a passport or visa. And so that for quite a while, that was a big obstacle. And being Dubai, things aren't spelled out as in it's not necessarily that easy. They won't just say do this, this and this. You have to speak to this person, go to this place, and it's a real roundabout way. In fact, you have to get a judge to approve it. And the first judge that saw our submission then came back asking for our marriage certificate, which we didn't have. So I don't know what the judge thought. So then we had to submit it again. And then we go to the place for the birth certificate and they were like, but you're not married. And we're like, yes, I know. But look, the judge has signed. So in the end, we got there, but it was stressful. It was a bit worrying. Yeah.
And so do you know like what the percentage is of like now people are that are expecting a child that are not married?
Well, I think a lot of people still just go and rush off and get married, or they decide to go back home. So yeah, we definitely thought about going back home. But the thing is, you're going to have to travel when you're fairly late on in your pregnancy, but you can't travel right up till the end, can you? Yeah, you only get a short maternity leave here. And obviously my partner wouldn't necessarily be able to come for all that time back to the UK. So for me, I didn't really feel like it was an option.
Yeah, well, it worked out, but...
yeah, you feel my stress, don't you?
Yeah. Do you? But like now, if you would get like another baby, would it be easier?
I think so. I think many more people have been through the process now. And I always advocate for anyone I hear about being... like a married and pregnant, not to just go and rush into marriage if it's not what they want. It is fairly straightforward now. So I don't think, but at the same time, the insurance is still the same. Like things haven't quite.
Oh, they have not changed that.
No, not yet.
Is it because they are just so conservative, or just against it, or just slow on bureaucracy?
Yeah, slow on bureaucracy, to be honest. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't say they're fully against it now. Like I wouldn't feel judged telling that to people here. But yeah, I think it is just the bureaucracy.
I see. Well, and then also the problem was that you were one of the first.
Yeah. So I really didn't know. I really didn't know how it was going to play out.
So, I mean, obviously you didn't have a child in Britain, but how do you compare the health system?
Yeah, in Britain, I think it really depends on the hospital you live close by. The difference there would be, it would be mainly midwife-led, whereas I had consultant-led care the whole way through. I got to pick my doctor, I got to pick my hospital. And that's something that's quite funny about Dubai is, to me anyway, is that you go and see all the different hospitals and see all the different doctors and choose which one you like. I already had a doctor that I liked, so I didn't really go through that. But as a Brit, that seems quite strange, because you would just get whoever you're given in the UK. Yeah, so also I expect a bit of luxury. If I'm going to birth a baby, I want to be in my own room that night, and I want to stay for a few days and make sure everything's okay. Whereas that in the UK, you wouldn't necessarily get. You'd be on a ward with other people. and that never appealed to me.
Yes, and the whole pregnancy, the care for you and for the baby?
Yeah, I felt really well cared for. For example, whenever I had a scare or I just thought the baby hadn't kicked for a while, I could go straight in and be seen straight away. Whereas I know in the UK, depending on where you live, you might go to A&E but be sat there for hours before you actually get seen. So I always felt really well cared for. But again, it will really depend by the kind of doctor you choose and the kind of hospital you go to, because my doctor was great and he was really laid back and that's what I needed, whereas you see a different doctor who might want to push cesareans, or you see a different doctor who wants to do it differently.
Or it depends on a person, right? They're all just humans. Okay, so now going back a little bit, before you even like were in Dubai, what did you expect? Like, have you visited before?
No.
Or what was your expectations like?
I told everyone there I'd be here for about a year, 2 years, because it wasn't real life. And a lot of people use this term that Dubai isn't real life as if it's for influencers, maybe. I don't know if you have that perception.
Because it feels so like, one, it's far away. It's like a totally different world than whatever the Western world where we are from.
Yeah.
And then also like all this like artificial stuff they have with all their money. You know, the palm trees in the water, in the islands kind of thing. And then the skiing facilities in the middle of the desert and the crazy high buildings.
Yeah, for sure. Much here, old. Like... This place really attracts dreamers and people who think big. And of course it does attract that kind of crowd as well, the people with the money, the influencing set. Like, of course they're here. But what you don't realise is there's just a lot of very normal people and normal families as well.
Okay.
So at the start I was here, I was doing a little bit of partying and like having fun. And now I've gone right to the other side. And I feel like Dubai can be anything you make it. Like if you want to come here and be all into yoga and that kind of thing, you'll find a tribe. If you want to do something totally different, you'll find a tribe. So it really is what you make of it here.
Okay, but was it that what you thought in the beginning or before you came?
I don't know what I really thought it would be like. I didn't have much expectations. I just read about like the skiing and the moles. What I did find strange was that I arrived and then I wanted to go for a walk and suss the place out. Like, I'd been in London where you just can walk everywhere, especially in lockdown. That's what I was doing, loads of walking. But you can't really do that here. Like, you go to a certain place. And so I found that really difficult at the start to know where I should be going and how to explore, other than just going to very set, like, tourist destinations, like going and seeing the penguins in the mall.
So what do you mean by you could not just walk? Do you have to take a car or?
Yeah. Like, you're not going to have a load of pavements or sidewalks.
Yeah. Everywhere. Okay. There are no sidewalks. Okay. Got it.
Yeah.
Crazy. I mean, I think they took the US as like their example, leading example, because there are no sidewalks here either.
I literally left the hotel and was like, okay, there's nothing to see here. And now I have to like get in a car to go somewhere. Like, I couldn't just explore, which is what I really wanted to do.
And did you have to buy a car?
Yeah, taxis totally doable here. They'll be here within minutes. It's all on your phone, like Uber and Careem and that kind of thing. So I did that for the first, I think, 6 months I did that for. Then I rented a car for another 6 months. And then in the end, I bought, and it is good to have a car here, definitely.
It's good to have,
They have a metro system, but it doesn't serve everywhere you want to go.
Right. It's not as, I mean, London is probably like one of the best ones, right?
Yeah. Like London, you don't need a car. A car will hinder you. You'll be quicker. Public transport. Yeah.
And but were you ever thinking of moving to a Muslim country? Like, did you?
No, and I guess that's something that where I think about my expectations versus reality, I was a bit worried about how safe it would be as a woman. When I moved here straight away, I realized that it's the opposite and I was way safer as a woman here. So I don't know why people have that perception that it wouldn't be as safe for a woman here.
I wouldn't think of like safer. I just meant more like, are you expected to wear a hijab?
No, so none of that.
None of that at all.
So at the moment it's Ramadan and I probably wouldn't go out wearing something really skimpy. But the only times that I've noticed anyone caring about what people is wearing is that you wouldn't walk from the beach in beachwear away from the beach. But that's quite an extreme difference, isn't it? I mean, if you were in Europe, say you're on holiday in Spain, you could walk to your hotel from the beach in your bikini, fine. But here you wouldn't do that.
Yeah, but that's only on vacation. It's like, even if I would go here, like let's go to a public swimming pool, I would not
go
in a bikini to my car, you know?
Yeah.
I just kind of put on my clothes. Yeah.
Yeah. But if I went to another emirate, I'd probably cover up slightly more. But honestly, I thought that, I mean, I bought some maxi dresses, maxi skirts to come over here that I've never taken out of my wardrobe.
Yeah. And so how international is it? Is it just full of expats?
Yeah, well, an interesting statistic is the statistic of Emirati locals here. I believe it's somewhere between, I think it's 13%, but it's definitely under 20% of the whole population here is Emirati local. So there's actually more Indians, there are more Filipinos, not quite as many Brits, but yeah, there's so many expats here. It is truly, truly international.
Yeah, so the common language then is English.
Yeah, common language here is English, more so than Arabic.
And also like at work.
Yes, yeah.
And everything.
Yeah, totally, totally English. So I was very, very lucky.
Yeah, so and also like all the street signs are in English. And so there's like no problem of getting lost.
No. English is definitely used here more than Arabic, I would say.
But was there anything in the beginning that was really hard for you to get used to?
I think we've touched on it slightly, but the bureaucracy. In the UK, everything is very like clear on how things are done. You could easily just Google something and it'll tell you exactly how to do whatever you're trying to do. Whereas here, I wasn't even really sure how I was getting my visa. I would just be told by my HR to now go to this location and now go here and now go there and drop your passport with this person. And it didn't really make sense to me. Whereas that would probably just all be done on an online form in the UK.
Okay.
Here they have things called typing centres as well, where you go and someone else seems to be filling out a form online that you wonder why you couldn't just do. Like, why do you have to go there? So it still really irritates me to this day that things aren't quite straightforward.
And like with your visa, is that normal that you first fly in and then you get the visa there?
Honestly, I still couldn't tell you because yes, I think it is. I think it is. You come in on a tourist visa. But again, the bureaucracy, and there's not just simple answers to all of these things. There are people who are experts that you have to talk to, but I don't know why it isn't just more straightforward.
Okay. Because like, I mean, I just know here, like you had to get your visa sorted before you enter the country.
Yeah, so I think it really depends. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And then was there a risk, like even though you had the job, that you wouldn't get the visa?
Not really. I wasn't too worried about that. I guess the risk is that for families here, you're never ever going to be a citizen. So you can set up your life here. And I see this happen a lot, that people will set up their life and the kids are in school, but then someone might lose their job. And they can't get another job, and then the visa's expiring and they have to leave like quite quickly. So that's more of the risk. Not getting the visa to start with, but actually holding on to that is quite hard to retire here. And yeah, that's always a bit of a risk.
Were you, when you were like switching jobs, were you worried about that?
I don't think so at the time because I didn't have much at stake here. I knew I wanted to stay, so I'd found a new job before I'd left my other job.
Okay.
Whereas when I left my job because I had a baby, that was much more difficult because I couldn't just leave my job and stay indefinitely. I had to think about how I was getting a visa. If I was married, I would actually be able to get a spousal visa through my partner. Yes. But that was one of the reasons I was going to have to set up a business to be able to sponsor myself.
Okay, so that's what you did.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what you did. Okay, so you have a store, right?
Yeah, so I have my own brand. It's called Next of Kin and it's baby clothes. So yes, I sell that online and I go and do pop-ups and markets. Yeah.
Oh, nice. So you don't like have a storefront, but you
not
do like... Mm-hmm. Well, that's really nice. And so you had to get a business and then you got a visa through that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Otherwise, it was going to be straight home for me or doing tourist visa runs.
Yeah, but that's not like this you can do for like a short while, but no. But that's nice. Like, okay, so baby clothes, Next of Kin. I will add this in the show notes.
I'll make
like a link to it. So I'm curious too, because maybe I find something for my kid. Is it only like for babies or is it also for small children?
Yeah, I'm going up to 3 years at the moment, but I think with this next collection, I'm going to go a bit older, maybe go up to 4 years, mainly because my daughter's really chubby. And so she needs the bigger sizes and she's going to grow out of this too quickly. So
I see. Yeah. So or maybe, and then you will do like till five and then maybe till...
I'd love for it to just keep growing with her. And then I know what you want at each stage. Because at the moment, I know what you want if you've got a baby. I'm learning what you want if you've got a toddler. So
yeah,
I'd like it to keep growing.
Yeah, nice. I'm definitely going to check it out later as well.
Thank you.
Was it complicated to set up the business?
Yes. Yeah, it was. I mean, you pay someone else to do it and you get... the information from there, but you need to get a trade license, and I don't even know how to explain it, because a mainland trade license, for example, if I was going to have a store, I would probably need a mainland trade license, but there's all of these free zones in the country, but there are about 50 to choose from to set up your trade license. So this is where you have to speak to a PRO or someone who knows what they're talking about and can give you the best options based on your business needs. And it felt all very complicated because, again, it wasn't just a straightforward list of here are all the different free zones or mainlands, or I mean there's even an e-license, a DED license for online, and I found that all quite hard to navigate.
Yeah, that sounds really complicated. And like, did you had like any regulations you had to follow? Just because it's more like of an online store, was that like a problem for the visa?
Not really. It depends. It's all linked to your trade license, basically.
Okay.
Because I knew I wasn't going to open a physical store, not yet anyway. I knew that I could go for a free zone. The physical stores, you often need to be sponsored by someone local or set up the business with them, which obviously I don't want to do. I just want to do this by myself, which is why I went for a free zone. But it really depends.
Okay, but good luck with the business. I mean, that's a lot of work.
It is, yeah. You underestimate it when you have the idea, but I do love it. I love what I'm doing, so yeah.
Okay, that's great. I mean, that's like all that you really want, right?
Yeah.
Having a job that you really love.
Yeah. And that's where my podcast came to fruition as well. Because when I had to leave my last job, suddenly, like, you go from being really institutionalized working for someone else, don't you, to then being able to work for yourself. And you just think, I could do anything. And I love podcasts. So I was like, well, I can do my own podcast. Yeah. And I can start my own business.
Yeah. Do you have time for everything?
I don't have much time for myself or a social life.
Yeah. Let's go to your podcast. What's your podcast name?
That's called Next of Kin as well. So Next of Kin, the podcast.
Oh, Next of Kin. Everything is Next.
Everything's
of Kin.
Next of Kin, yeah. So okay. It all ties in.
All right. And I will also make a note in my show notes for this one too.
Thank you.
And it's about parenting.
Yeah. So season one that's out already basically follows along my story of being an expat mum in that first year and also setting up my business. So a lot of people follow along because they enjoy the story of me leaving my job and starting a business. So season two will launch in April. And for that, I'm going to speak to loads of experts when it comes to business and mums that have done it and how they've done it. And also it's all expat based because I'm here in Dubai.
Yeah. Okay. That's really interesting for me as well, because I'm also an expat mom. So,
yeah.
So how do you do then childcare?
Okay, yeah, this is quite interesting in Dubai because there's a real nanny culture here. So it's very normal to have a nanny. So I felt really against it for some reason. I didn't want a nanny at all. I wanted her to go to a nursery because that's kind of normal to me in the UK. Mm-hmm. But when I thought about it, with her still breastfeeding, she didn't want to take a bottle, this child, at all. Definitely wouldn't take a bottle. So I kind of was forced into needing to get a nanny so that she could be with her close by when I went back to work and bring her to me so I could carry on breastfeeding. And also the nannies will do all the housework. It's very normal here when you're looking at somewhere to live. It might say 2-bed, 3-bed, but it will be plus maid. I actually don't have a maid's room here, but it's very normal to have a live-in housekeeper or nanny.
So is it almost like an au pair then?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, for us, that's not what we have. We have a nanny who's actually leaving. My daughter is going to nursery in the end, and then we'll get help with cleaning. But yeah, it's very normal to have either a housekeeper or a nanny who lives in with you.
Okay. And are they local people?
I would say they would mainly be Filipinos. They might be from Africa, Sri Lanka I see a lot of. But I think they do have to be specific nationalities here to get that kind of visa.
Interesting.
Yeah, the home help kind of visa.
Okay, and then she goes to a nursery, and that is similar to one that you would have in England, like...
Yeah,
I don't know. Do they have like all those different kinds, like Montessori or?
Yeah, all of that. So many different nurseries to choose from. She's just at a British curriculum one. But I mean, the facilities here are amazing. You know, she's got like a sensory room. Then she's got a soft play in her nursery. She's got an outdoor splash pad and all of the a library.
Okay.
Like, it really But she's a bougie baby.
But like, correct me if I'm wrong. Are they all very new?
The nurseries?
Yeah, because I imagine just Dubai is such a new city. So
yeah, everything feels new here. If you think about this country is only 50 something years old.
Yeah,
52, 51 years old, and most of Dubai has been built like within my lifetime. So I mean, her nursery opened last year. Everything is quite new.
Now a different question. Is there anything that you miss besides friends and family?
Definitely, obviously friends and family, but what we find ourselves craving is the fresh air, the countryside, to see grass and sheep instead of camels and sand, because here you can't go outside in the summer and it's just so hot, and it's that humidity. So when I land in the UK, people will say like, oh, I'm so sorry about the rubbish weather, and I'm like, this is great, like I've missed this. That's what I really crave about when I'm here.
Yeah, so is there anything that you can do outside of the city of Dubai?
Yeah, and I think people forget to go out and explore the deserts because it's so cool. And people often feel like there's no nature here, but it's just totally different. Before I had
Bonnie,
Yeah, we would go and we'd go out into the desert and we'd find somewhere to go hiking. And it's so much fun. Just recently with Bonnie, I went to a desert cafe. And so in the middle of all the dunes, they'd done a pop-up cafe and you can sit there and watch the sunset over the dunes. And they have camels there. And yeah, it's so much fun. So we always forget to get out into the rest of the UAE and that it's not just the city.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But I mean, you have a car. So how far do you have to drive to get out of the city?
I would say only about 40 minutes. 40 minutes to 2 hours from Dubai, you can get to most of the rest of the UAE.
Okay, so that is doable, totally, enjoy like different kind of nature that is not green.
Yeah, I mean, you can also drive into Oman, and we haven't done that yet, but it's only about 2 to 3 hours from Dubai to drive to somewhere called Masandam, where they have, you go on a traditional boat all day and you get to see dolphins. And yeah, like, we're really excited to do that at some point. You can do all the snorkeling or the diving. Yeah,
that
really
sounds nice.
Go.
Yeah. What is something that you like best in Dubai?
As a parent, I like the safety here. We don't have to lock our front door. If I was to leave my phone somewhere, I would expect for it to still be there. Here, if you are getting, if you're reserving a seat somewhere or a table in a restaurant, you would just put your phone there and walk off, or your designer purse, you could just put there and walk off. I actually saw, I was in a Starbucks a few years ago and I was working, and I noticed that there was, I think they were photographers or they had loads of expensive equipment and laptops. And they just left it in the Starbucks and went off for a good hour, 2 hours.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like, you could not do that in London.
Never. Anywhere.
Yeah. So I really value that as a parent.
Yeah. And but is it because, I mean, because it's like fancy equipment, it's mostly because people have lots of money? This is just what I'm thinking, like, or what I'm hearing.
I mean, obviously, there is a lot of money here and people have a good disposable income, but people are really hit by the cost of living this year, right? As a brand owner, I've noticed. And I think people think that we're immune to it here. But our rent has skyrocketed. So many people are getting priced out. So, people do have money here and they have a good way of living and a disposable income that they can really go out and enjoy things and have nannies and all of that kind of thing is very normal. But we're not immune to the cost of living crisis either.
Sure. Yeah, no, it's because I mean, it's just, I haven't been there. And all I know is from my other podcast episode with this girl from Dubai and also from watching TV, because like, I remember it was always like presented as just like money, lots of rich people. And you never like really see like the normal people in Dubai.
Yeah. And it's a little frustrating whenever there's a new documentary that's come out back home and they have the most ridiculous characters on there that just seem.
Yeah, exactly.
They just seem like complete airheads who only care about Chanel, like with no taste. And then that same day, or everyone will be on the Facebook groups or the WhatsApp groups with the mums being like, oh my goodness, have you seen this? Like, how ridiculous. But we still like the Real Housewives of Dubai. It's still fun to watch, but it's not real life. It's not what it's really like there.
Okay, so like there are like normal people in Dubai too.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You seem also very normal. So.
I promise I'm pretty normal.
Good. So how did you make friends?
So what I found, and maybe this is just as a comparison to London, but in London, you don't really get chatting to new people much. It's just not what you do there. Whereas here, anyone that I spoke to, I mean, even the girl that was showing me the room that I then rented was like, oh my goodness, you've just moved here. Like, you should come to this thing. You should do that. And I would be really embarrassed in the UK to put myself out there to make new friends with anyone, to drop someone a message who's a friend of a friend and be like, can we hang out?
Totally. I get it. Yeah.
But in Dubai, like, that's totally normal. And okay. I think it's a really nice way of living, especially now that I have a brand. I'm meeting all these small business owners and I have a podcast. Yeah. So I'm meeting those different mums and guests that I have on there. And I really enjoyed that. There's, I guess, the main way here that is different to the UK is that things are done on Facebook groups a lot. So you'll definitely be part of all the different mums groups here. I'm part of so many.
Okay.
And you'll go to all of those kind of events, which I didn't use Facebook in the UK.
Did this? So I remember like those mum Facebook groups when my daughter was really little. I did it only once, and it was, for me, it was so awkward. But I guess also I think it was just a lot of local people who, I don't know, at least like I was the only non-American.
Right.
And so for me, it felt just like I was at the wrong place. So I never went back. That was like my only experience with like Facebook groups. Yeah. So, but there, do you have like, they're all like, you're from everywhere.
Yeah. And there's all the different types of groups as well. So you can easily find your tribe among them, and you can try all the different events, and you'll be really welcome to each one, but you'll probably find your tribe and the people that you mix with well. Yeah,
I saw this one also on Instagram. It's like expat ladies or something, and then they have like always coffee in it's in Dubai too.
I think I've heard of that one as well. Coffee with an expat.
Yeah, coffee with an expat. Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I've never been to that one, but yeah, there's so many different events here all the time. I mean, I've just been at an event where it was like a market within a big children's play center. And so that was done with one of the mums groups called the Mum Folk. And they put on this market with all the small retailers. And again, that was just something that all the mums come to. They meet their friends, the kids are playing, we'll have a bit of a shop. So I'm part of all of these different events these days.
Yeah, nice. So you open a business. So does that mean that you want to stay longer?
Yeah. Well, I said at the start that I only expected to be here for a year or two. And I definitely thought that when I had children, I wouldn't want to stay here.
Yeah.
And now it's the opposite. Like, I love the prospect of them going to school with people from all different nationalities and feeling like a real child of the world instead of just from the UK. Like, I really would love for her to at least do a bit of school here. If we are lucky enough to stay for as long as possible, we would absolutely love that. But it also gives us the confidence now that if a job opportunity for me or my partner came up in a different country, that we'd like to try that and would like to explore if possible. So I can't say I've got like a 5 or a 10 year plan, but I don't see myself going back to the UK anytime soon.
Okay. All right. So for now, you want to stay.
Yeah. We're here for the foreseeable.
Nice. But do you call it home?
Yeah. It's funny to think of that. Where do, like, when I think of where's my home, I don't think of London anymore. I haven't been to Cheltenham for a long time. So it definitely does feel like home now. And when I go back to London, I don't feel safe there anymore. And it used to feel safe because I was just used to it. That's how it was. But I've been in Dubai now for quite a while, whenever I go back, I suddenly think, wow, I really don't feel safe here. So it definitely feels like home now.
But so when you talk about like not being safe in London, like, what do you mean? Like being mugged or?
Yeah, or just, you know, there might, I guess you don't come across like a lot of drunk people in the street or anything like that here.
I see.
Again, like there's just this sense that there aren't people trying to mug me. I had my phone stolen twice in London, maybe more. I think twice that I can think of. Whereas that's nothing like that's ever happened to me here, and I don't sense that there's danger around me.
Yeah. Okay. I got it. Because I forgot the drunk people in England. How often do you go home though?
So I'm really missing home at the moment. I haven't been back since last summer. And once a year was fine before you have a baby, but they grow yeah. so quickly, don't you? So at the moment, I really am just can't wait till summer so that I can go back and show Bonnie and how much she's grown to everyone.
Yeah. Do you go in summer just to escape the heat?
Yeah. And that's going to be one of the real upsides of having my own business and being able to do that for right. a prolonged, because I don't know what I'm going to do here with a toddler. I'm really not looking right. forward uh-huh. to that.
Yeah.
So I want to get out.
Yeah. So how do you usually spend then summers, because you cannot go out? So you just like go from mall to mall?
Yeah. And there are so many malls here, so many like kiddie soft plays, all that kind of mm-hmm. thing. But yeah.
And like splash pads.
Yeah. Yeah. All of that in the pool. But it does get a bit like you do need to leave in summer because it gets a bit yeah. too much.
How long is the summer? How long is it like bad?
I would say June, July, August are the worst.
Uh-huh.
September's then really humid. By October, it starts to cool off. But
yeah.
we're just in the best time now in March, definitely. Yeah. February, March time.
And yeah. What are the winters like?
Winters are really lovely. Something that is really interesting about the UAE is they have something called cloud seeding. Have you ever heard of this?
Cloud seeding? Yeah. No. What is that?
So here you would only normally get about 4 days of rain a year. So you really don't get much rain.
Uh-huh. Oh, wow.
But they've decided, obviously, this is a place where they dream and they just make the country whatever they want it to be. Mm-hmm. So they've decided they want it to be much more green. And so what they do is they basically make it rain. So they send up aeroplane. They have a whole department here that is the Department of Rainmaking. And so these last few weeks, we've had a load of rain because they've decided to make it rain and uh-huh. crazy storms, which is silly, really, because the schools will shut when it rains here because there's not the infrastructure. There's not the drainage. Everyone's houses are leaking when it rains. Yeah. So, yeah, they have something called cloud seeding here. And that's been interesting this winter. We haven't really seen as much rain as this winter.
Do you know how that works?
Oh, I know that they basically send aeroplanes up when they spot a cloud. When they send aeroplanes up, and I believe it's something to do with like electrocuting clouds or using drones and using aeroplanes. But no, I couldn't tell you exactly how it works.
Okay, so the clouds are already there. So they just kind of make them rain?
Yeah, I guess so. This is how I understand it, but okay. I wouldn't take my word for it.
I'm going to look this up later.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never heard of that. And I think I heard of that. But like, it's to me, it's like, whatever. You know?
Yeah. Well, crazy. No one believes me that there's a whole department. I've got a picture. It's in the financial district and it's Department of Rainmaking. So there's a government department and these people literally work on making rain.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And so then when you go in summer, how long do you go?
Well, hopefully this year I can go back for a good month. I think mm-hmm. I'll need that so that Bonnie can just have some fresh air and run around in the fields and see all family. So yeah, I'm hoping we can go back for a month.
Yeah, and do you get a lot of visitors?
You know, you would think that we would get more, but it was a funny time when I moved over because it was
still very much
COVID, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Whereas this last month we've had my partner's family, my youngest brother's going to come over in a few weeks, so that would be nice. Uh-huh. But before that, we had people come over to meet Bonnie when she was just born, and that was about it. So not as many as I expected.
Yeah, because probably is weird times.
Yeah. And we go back, so people see us anyway.
But I was just thinking, because it's such a famous place and people are very curious about it, and if they have like friends or family there, they would take the opportunity.
Well, it's definitely on all of my friends' lists, but I find it's probably just that bit too far for it to be
it is
a spur-of-the-moment decision. I think if it was somewhere that was a like Spain is a 2-hour plane ride.
Right.
It's probably a bit different to coming all the way over to the Middle East. It's a seven hour flight.
It's a 7-hour flight?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's...
It's not too bad, is it? But it's still...
No, I mean, I'm used to those 12-hour flights. You know? So 7 hours to me sounds like doable.
That's short haul to you.
Yeah, exactly. I think I got mostly all my questions.
Amazing. It's been so nice to speak to you.
Yeah, thank you for being on my podcast.
Thank you. I'm going to go and listen to what the other person from Dubai said as well. Yeah, see how she found it.
Yeah, she also has a... Yeah, that was Emma's story. And I told you all her links to Next of Kin, to the online store, and also to her podcast are in the show notes. So yeah, check it out. I really enjoyed this conversation, I have to say. It was so nice to hear what you can do outside of Dubai. And setting up a business is always badass. Sorry for my language. And for you listener who is interested in the other Dubai episode of Worlds Collide, that was in season 1 episode 16 with the super nice Ezra from Sweden, so check that one out too. And then I just wanted to go back to the cloud seeding. So I'm just reading a little bit what I found online from a news source from cbsnews.com. So it's just a little part of the article. So it's like, it says, scientists in the United Arab Emirates are making it rain artificially using electrical charges from drones to manipulate the weather and force rainfalls across the desert nation. Meteorological officials released video footage this week showing a downpour over Ras El Khaimah as well as several other regions. And so it goes. Okay, so that was just like a quick explanation. I will also put this in the show notes for you so you can read more about it if you find this really interesting. So, and then as always, if you want to reach out to me, you can do so at worldscollide123pod@gmail.com or find me on Instagram and then find me on Threads or TikTok. Thanks as always. Search Quarundo for the beautiful music that I'm using on this podcast. It's called Spy Jazz. And yeah, don't forget to tell your friends about this podcast if you like it. Not if you don't like it. Okay. Okay, see you next week. Until then, bye.